Listener production.
Welcome back to another episode of That's Enough Already with me, Ursula Carlson. And this week, my friend and Kiwi cousin, he's not really my cousin at all, Tom Sainsbury joins the show this week with a rip over story about the time he filled in for a role in a kindergarten play. It's good to see actors work, which is quite surprising considering he went to acting school and failed his course. But we'll unpack that in this episode. You can catch Tom and his 2024 tour, Gone Banana, starting off at the Melbourne Comedy Festival, March 28th, with extra dates just added in Sydney and Melbourne. For tickets and info, head to livenation.com. Enjoy today's episode.
Shh, that's quite enough. Oh, just shut your mouth. I don't give a stuff. It, shush, please. Yes, I can hear. But I don't care. That's enough already. Shut up.
Shush. Tom Sainsbury, as I live and breathe, huge fan of your work. Can I just say, before you came on, I was talking to Natalie, the producer, about herpes, as we do, you know, always top of mind. She's a young person.
Yeah.
I saw this morning there was a man, he's got a 30-second memory. That's it. Just 30 seconds because he contracted herpes.
No way.
Now, I don't know. I'm not saying where this man got it or how he got it. Like, I'm not his physician.
Yes.
But it says, he developed this profound case of total amnesia as a result of his illness, herpes, because of damage to his hippocampus, an area required to transfer memories from the short-term to the long-term memory. Fuck, you do not want to mess that up. That's when you get drunk, right? Like your hippocampus goes on holiday. The two don't camp in the same park, as they say in the Bible. And now he's completely unable to form lasting new memories. His memory for events lasts between 7 and 30 seconds. His long-term memory is 30 seconds.
I mean, what's his life like?
Amazing, because he can't remember shit. He can't remember, like, imagine even breaking your leg. Then 30 seconds later, you're like, I'm happy again. Wait, why does my leg hurt? And, like, you're just, I mean.
That constant cycle. This is an absolute nightmare.
It is an absolute fucking nightmare. He couldn't go in the arts. This man's not doing an hour stand-up.
He couldn't do an hour-long sesh.
No, I mean, he could. I've seen comics with 30 seconds in them, you know, do an hour.
100%.
It's not good, but it happens. How are you? I feel like I haven't seen you. Well, I mean, I see you because I watch all this shit online. So what are you working on? You're doing a show in Melbourne at the Comedy Festival.
Yeah, I'm doing my first. This is the first time I've kind of performed. I've gone over to Australia before to do improv with my troupe Snort, but this is the first time I've ever kind of just done my stand-up. But I'm kind of taking all the best stuff from New Zealand that isn't kind of New Zealand-specific and hoping to wow them, but we'll see.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Are you doing it this year? Are you doing Melbourne this year?
Yeah, mate. Like, I am Miss Melbourne.
That's your moneymaker.
All right, let's not tell people that. Like, I'm trying to stay under the radar. I'm just one of the people. I don't want people to know I do Melbourne then buy a beach house every year. No, like, I'm just a normal woman from West Auckland. My neighbours all have pit bulls.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, that's all true. And my other neighbour keeps showing me his dick. But that is, I know, it's many a man's fantasy to whip out his dick and show me. I must say, like, he's quite repulsive. I've spoken about this, his penis before. He's quite repulsive, the man himself, but the dick isn't bad.
So hang on a second. So this is you, like, you're out in the backyard and he makes eye contact with you when he does it?
Yeah, always full eye contact when he's whipping it out.
And do you respond or do you just kind of carry on?
Oh, my dick is still in the house at this point. I can't respond. I should actually go put my strap on and come out of my dick. But it's so heavy it hurts my back, you know.
Yeah. And there's so much with the kind of the tying it up at the back is quite difficult. Yeah, sliding it around the thighs.
And then the tip drags on the cement, you know. You don't want all that crud in there for later, and then you have to wash it. The first time you and I met.
Yes.
Was shooting Super City. How many years ago was that?
That's right.
Super City 2.
12.
Is that how long ago it was?
Yeah.
That's me as an actor. Did you rate me as an actor?
And I was like, oh, this is amazing. She's a double threat.
I'm a triple threat. Because, I believe I did mention my strap on. So that would make me a triple threat.
Yes, true.
I'm a good driver too. I like to put that as a skill set.
Yes.
I'm a good driver and a great cook. Like, I think so. Shit like that should be on LinkedIn.
You're a quintuple threat.
I should just come out with a fucking watch out.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, not even, unless I put a number on it, because I learn new shit every day. Every day. Like, not,
yeah, true.
Not anything super useful, like a new language or anything. Although I think that's,
and thank
overrated.
Goodness you've got a memory longer than 30 seconds to for 7 minutes.
Well, now I've just got to dodge the herpes.
I know.
Yeah. Are you single?
I am in a relationship with a man for
well, you're
six
a homosexual.
Years now.
Love it.
I know. 6 years. I'm one of those.
You're not married yet?
Or I don't think we'll ever get married. If we were to ever do it, it would be, you know, in the registry office with one, with Elvis.
Oh, yes, in Vegas.
In Vegas somewhere.
Yeah.
But no, we just don't, we don't see the need to get married nor want that attention.
Yeah, see, now that was always my thing. I'm like, we shouldn't, I don't think straight people should get married either, even before we got marriage equality. And people were, and I mean, I totally get it. If that's your buzz, that's your buzz. But, you know, so we pay them so they can give us a piece of paper so that if you do split up, then you get to pay thousands of dollars to get that a different paper to say, all right, you're no longer in it. It's like that sleepover when you're a kid at someone from school that you don't know that well, but you know they're really wealthy. And then you go sleep over at their house and their mom's real fucking controlling. Okay, now next up, we're going to play tag. And you're like, I don't want to play tag. You guys have a pool. I want to be in the pool. But the mom's like, no, no, we're going to play tag. So that's the fucking government making you play shit you don't want to play.
How do you, I love that you know this very specific bit. I know exactly the rich parent, the rich family with the rich mother who takes control. I know that. That's my lived experience.
Yeah, same. It's like, bitch, just let us be, because I was the poor kid. And my best friend in primary school, Jackie, her mum, Auntie Gloria, was also lovely. But then we'd go play there and her mum was like, okay, now we're going to do this. Now we're going to do that. I'm like, you guys have a pool. I want to go play in the pool. And then she's like, no, we're not going to do that now.
The one I went to, his name was Damien, and he was, they were the rich family. Yeah. And I kind of went there just to find, look at the mansion that they lived in.
Yeah.
But he also had a slug gun and his sister, he would shoot, you know, a slug gun, which is the little tiny bullets. He would sit in his window and shoot at his sister and try and hit her with a slug gun.
Damien sounds like a problem. Have you lost touch with Damien?
I've lost touch with Damien.
Yeah, because there's no internet in prison. That's why you've lost touch with Damien.
Exactly. You got it. You got it.
Hey, you went to drama school, right?
I auditioned for drama school and I didn't get in.
How's that possible?
My soul still cringes thinking about that audition. I went in there, I don't know, I was so kind of, I was excusing my bad performance in the monologue, like I stopped in the middle of the monologue doing some Shakespearean or something like that, and I blamed the acoustics of the hall, like everything about it, like my whole, and and then we had to do an improv with the other people, with the other auditionees, we had to do an improv scene where we had to find out by the end of the improv that one of us had murdered someone.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just went in there hot and hard and said, it was me. And I just threw everyone off their game. Like, it was me. I was the murderer. Just threw everyone off the game. And then they started improvising their own scene on the side. And it was just carnage.
Oh, my God.
So I never got in. And so I went and did English literature at university instead. A poor man's substitute.
I know heaps of people who went to drama school who is shit.
Well, I think it's like you have to kind of learn everything. Like, you learn it all and you get good skills, but then you just kind of have to learn it all again. Like, I put a play on at university. I directed and produced it myself. And everyone was, for some reason, I always had rehearsals on Sunday morning. So my attendance would have been maybe 1% of the cast would show up.
Yeah. You haven't had a lot of luck in that department with putting on plays and shit, because you did, you were the drama teacher at after school care. And then
that's right.
Yeah, tell us what happened there, because that's fucking hilarious.
So I was teaching these kids in a very privileged suburb in Auckland. I was teaching them drama after school, and I was just kind of doing it for the cash. Like, I wanted to be their friend at the beginning, and then I was like, oh, I'm just yelling at them to get off the stack chairs. And then I was like, I'm just going to ride this out. But halfway through the term, I get this email from the producer saying, hey, how's their end of term show coming along? I was like, what? So I quickly read the contract, and it was part of my contract that I'd signed without reading, that I had to put on a show with all the students at the end for friends and family.
Yeah.
And I had to write the show. So I desperately wrote the show. And there was one real brat in the class. I'm going to call Jeremy Dixon because that was his name. And he was like a real brat. So I wrote him a really kind of a character that really reflected him. And, you know, I was hoping through the power of art that, you know, he would learn the error of his ways. And so we rehearsed, and everyone was kind of getting there. Jeremy was like really against doing the part, but slowly and surely he started rehearsing and thinking about the character, and he started really kind of growing as a person, right? But then on the night of the performance, he didn't show up. And so we were kind of backstage going, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And then I was like, well, the only person that can kind of, like, I'll have to step up in Jeremy's part. So Jeremy is like, all these kids are like 13 and 14 year old, right? And so the play begins. And all these kids come on, and my appearance is about to happen. And I was like, the audience has no kind of concept of who I, like, I wasn't introduced at the beginning of the show. So they're watching like 13 and 14 year olds.
So it's going to think you were held back a few years.
Exactly. They're going to think I was held back 20 years. And so I walk on stage and do this play as a 13 year old boy. And I forgot, like, it was all kind of coming to me as we're going. And the play kind of involved my character pulling girls' ponytails. Sound familiar? So there I was as a man in my 30s pulling like 13 and 14-year-old girls' ponytails, right? I was humiliated. Got to the end of the play. Thought, okay, thank God that's over. And then I was trying to escape afterwards, and this dad kind of stepped in front of me and he's like, so are you an adult student? He asked me. I said, no, sorry, I'm the teacher. And he's like, you could see him really relaxing. It's like, oh, thank God. So they were all thinking, like, who was this weird adult in the play? And then as I was leaving, his mother, so this man's mother, this man's grandmother, so she was a great-great-grandmother of the kid in the show, she kind of beckoned me in and she said, well, I thought you were a very good actress. And then that was it. So she watched the whole play and she didn't even realise my gender.
Maybe she just went, I'm going to sign a new one. This is too crazy. It's too confusing for her to retain the gender thing. Maybe she sees you online. Because how many different characters do you play? Do you keep track of them all?
No, it's hundreds now, but it's pretty like there's like, you know, sassy mum characters. Like they're all kind of, you can really kind of group them. I've probably got like maybe 10 groupings of characters, you know? My favourite is probably, I've got this character on Instagram called Boomer Dad. You know, that's where obviously I'm heading.
Yeah.
Obsession with Colby Cheese.
Well, not if you're gonna not get married, then you can't ever escalate to that stage. Because, you know, there's a certain relaxation, the comfort in which you can read a paper and just grunt at your partner when you're married, like, huh?
Yes.
Because you get to a point where you sort of, you don't hear what they're saying, but you can assume because it's Sunday morning at 11 and you know what they normally say on a Sunday morning at 11. So, you know, it's like, oh, I better get my ass in gear, something like that. So you can start answering. So, and they don't really know or care what you're saying because they're just responding with what they assume you'd be saying at this point. So,
yes. You're painting an idyllic picture.
Yeah. I mean, that is literally the only positive thing about being married, is that not giving a fuck phase.
Have you been someone who has given a fuck when you were younger? Did you worry?
Not really, because I was always a fat kid. You know, from like I was the biggest baby ever born in the Queen Victoria Hospital. And then I was just always the big kid. Like, didn't matter where I go, I was always the fat kid. And I just realized early on, like, people will say shit. Like, a guy just called me a hungry, hungry lesbo. Shut up, you unfunny, hungry, hungry lesbo. Like, so I assume it's for like hungry, hungry hippo. But then there's always like people will say stuff about my looks or, you know, and I'm like, oh, it's really the dumbest of the fucking dumb. Like, I've never had smart, successful people never comment on my looks or because they're busy being smart and successful. It's losers who have a lot of fucking time on their hands and go, I'm going to say something. She's fat. I'm going to say that. Honestly, I have no respect for people who call out obvious shit. But this man with the hungry, hungry lesbo, because I just, there's a close-up of his profile. I normally don't click through on people's profiles because I don't care about their looks or what they do. I don't give a fuck. But now people who are harassing me about my looks, I always go and find a photo of them now and go, fucking look at the state of you. Now, this guy, this guy has three daughters, right? And I will circle back fat and shit and put it on the comments. But his daughters are the three butchest lesbians I've ever seen. These three bull dykes standing next to him and his wife in a Christmas photo. And he is cross-eyed as fuck. Like, he is so unattractive, like, just hideous. And he's cross-eyed. And this man has the motherfucker audacity to comment on my looks. So I said, excuse me, Gavin. His name's Gavin. Can you believe it? I said, excuse me, Gavin, can we just chill out? You are raising three fat lesbians and you're fucking cross-eyed. I go, you need to step back, bitch.
Oh, my God. This is so good. Does he get one extra point for the wordplay of hungry, hungry lesbian?
No, because, you know, he was probably busy playing hungry, hungry hippo. That's the kind. We're not talking about a man.
He's probably feeding his wife and three daughters.
But this is the problem. Heterosexual women are so desperate for a heterosexual solvent man that they will settle for fucking anything. Like a friend of mine said once, she goes, we're talking about, you know, when all our kids were little. And I was changing a nappy. And she goes, it would be nice to sort of have a sister wife so I can have someone else change nappies. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean someone else change nappies? Your child is a father. And she goes, men don't change nappies, and especially the shitty ones. And then all the wives go, oh, yeah, no, my husband will not touch a shitty nappy. Oh, and they all agree. And I'm like, you fucking had more than one child with this man that would not change a shitty nappy? That's on you, bitch.
Yeah.
You cannot. No, all right. Tell me what was, because do you do corporates and stuff?
So doing MC stuff is like a big part of like how comedians make money, I think. You know, it's an opportunity. So just hosting events and things like that. But the worst one I've actually ever done, for me, I did one with Madeline Sami for a bank, and we had this whole kind of character shtick going on, but the audience didn't realize we were characters and no one laughed for the entire 30 minutes. But anyway, sometimes they put you up for a really lovely meal beforehand.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting there at the table, and someone sitting opposite me at this table was really picking her nose.
No.
Oh.
Oh, you've got a courier.
I've got a courier.
You've got a courier. I recognize that hello anywhere. Go get it. Go get it. Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, this is a signature one. Yes, sorry.
Don't want to miss a signature one. If you miss a signature one, you have to go in. Yeah, no.
From Japan.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I was doing this, sitting at this table at this kindergarten conference, and this woman was really picking her nose, really kind of really going for it.
Yeah.
And like looking at it and then wiping it on the tablecloth. And stuff. No. I was like sitting there disgusted, looking around at other people going, is anyone else seeing this?
Yeah.
And no one was. And then I was so kind of transfixed on that, I didn't hear my introduction to begin with, but the CEO was on stage kind of doing it. And then he had to repeat, and welcome to the stage, Tom Sainsbury. But anyway, I walked around the table, walked past her, and she's like, the woman who was picking her nose said, you've got this. And she held her hand up for a high five. No. And I was so kind of flustered by it all. So I gave her a high five and walked up onto stage. And they wanted some comedy, but I also wanted to talk, because these were all kindergarten teachers, and I decided to talk about, you know, because when you're a kindergarten teacher, you might be responsible for these kids' first memories.
Yeah.
So I started talking about my kind of first memory at kindergarten. And my very first memory was actually on the first day of kindy. So I would have just turned four. And we were waiting, me and another girl were waiting to be taken out of the office and shown around the kindergarten. And there was a girl sitting beside me, and she had two fingers, her index fingers up her nostrils, having a good old mind, and she was sucking her thumbs.
Yeah.
And then after about 10 seconds, she would pull them all four out, swap it, and the thumbs would go into her nose, and she'd be sucking her index fingers.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this memory, and then I started to think, hang on a second. Wouldn't this be poetry if that woman was the girl that went to kindy with me? I was like, this is poetry. Like, that was my first memory. And now this is going to be my last memory. Mission met, and then I die of an aneurysm straight afterwards. Wouldn't that be like a perfect cyclical life?
Yeah.
And so I just kind of stumbled off. I didn't, like, my final punchlines didn't kind of make anything. And he's like, well, you know, CEO comes on. Thanks, Tom. What a treat that was. Half-hearted clapping and stuff. And so I sidled up to this woman afterwards at the dance. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy, but just hear me out. Is there any way that you went to Rafferty Kindergarten in like the mid-80s? And she said, no, of course not, because I was born in 2001.
No!
So I completely, misread the room anyway.
Oh, my God. But I think you should use that story anyway, but then say, you know, you were sitting in the class in the office waiting for the teacher to take you around and show you. And then that girl who kept swiping fingers turned to you and said,
yes,
we've got this, and gave you a high five. And then,
yes. Yeah,
and then when you're on stage, you're like, and then yes. You just look over at her and she's still going like this in the room. I think they have to do a little bit about her and really make that fucking nose picker. forever you'll be talking about, oh my God. People are so unaware of themselves. It's like I used to do a bit about, and it's usually people in a sedan. I don't know why. Maybe because I love them. So it's like, as soon as you get in your Toyota Camry, it's not a cloak of invisibility. We can see what you're doing in there.
And then yes.
People pick their noses and either they eat it or they pick it and they flick it in the footwell.
Yes.
No, I think if they could light up the footwell with like a blue light, you know, like it will light up like a Smurf's anus. Like I used to say to my brother when we lived in South Africa, you know, there's a lot of hijackings. And if a hijacker would sometimes take you with them, right? And if they try and bundle you in the footwell of your passenger, you're like, no, just shoot me in the head. I don't want to go in there. There's too much that have gone in there. I know. Like you find anything on your person, you chuck it in the footwell. You know, you're like, oh, what is this in my ear? Chuck it in the footwell. Everything.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
I'm feeling in there,
you're like, shoot me. Tell me, Tom Sainsbury, what is something that shits you about other people?
Oh, okay. So this is just a little one, and this just reminded me, like, because this just happened to me yesterday. But people, you'll have a different experience, but people in New Zealand who overreact to spiders just shits me.
Oh, I have that. My bro, like, honestly, people come. My brother is so scared of spiders. I'm like, bitch, you used to live in Mozambique.
Yes.
The
it's just that, and it's like, calm down, like a little black spider, and they react so that the reaction is too much for the situation, and it's not going to harm you.
People here in New Zealand freak out about cobwebs, like just cobwebs. Yes. I'm like, it's small enough to make a web. You're fine. You know, it's like those big ones that are too heavy for the cobwebs. Those are the ones you have to worry about. Not the ones who can make a cobweb, just brush that off. But people freak out. They scream. I'm like, where the fuck do you live? Think you're living at the Okavango?
Exactly.
Chill out. You're in West Auckland, mate. Fucking hell.
The ones that don't make webs or the ones that can make webs on the tropical islands that catch birds and lizards.
Yeah. Once it's smoke a pack of Lexington a day, those are the ones you have to worry about. You know when you walk through the bush and you can hear, excuse me.
Yes.
That is a fucking spider, not these little things. Even people go, white tails are poisonous. Can they kill you? No, only the real weak and newborn, but they do leave an itchy mark on your body. Do they now?
Yes.
Yeah, no, they sound fucking frightening. Nothing here can kill you, nothing. There's no animals, there's nothing that can harm you. Like, you have to watch out for some of these politicians. But that's
yes.
Hey, what's something about yourself that shit you to tears?
Oh, like, my ability to procrastinate is unparalleled, but I just want to talk about how weak I am to impulse buying. Every time at the supermarket, I'm not even conscious of it until I'm in the car halfway through the Mars bar or something. I was like, hang on a second. Why am I such a sucker for impulse buying and the psychology of supermarkets?
We have to interrupt this podcast so you can go get a parcel at the door. You said it's from
exactly. It's for my boyfriend from Japan. Absolutely not. But also procrastinating, like, God, the amount of times that old thing of like you put it off for 6 weeks and then it takes 15 minutes to do. Yeah. I'm just constantly in that situation.
I know, but I think that's a creative thing because I'm the same. I will literally paint the whole, and I did last week, paint the entire bathroom instead of just filing some paperwork, which took me 2.5 minutes to do.
Yeah.
You know, but no, story I painted the whole bathroom, but at least now the bathroom's painted. So that's done. So now, but not that was required, but that is done now. Anyway, hey, Tom, good luck in Melbourne. I know you're going to crush it. You're going to love it so much. It's the best audiences in Melbourne. I mean,
can't wait.
All of Australia is pretty good. Like, there's no, I've never really come across a real shit audience, you know, or they're all pretty comedy savvy. And it's thanks to the absolute workhorses like the Kitty Flanagans that tour all the time and tour regional and just go and educate these people on what good comedy is that makes it easy for the rest of us, you know. So that's really good. But enjoy it.
Thank
I'll see you then.
You too.
I'll buy you a coffee in one of the laneways because that's the best place to go from. All right, thank you. Natalie, come back, you freak show. Talk about herpes as people come on, honestly. That wraps up today's episode. If you enjoyed my chat with Tom, then maybe do a deep dive into my other Melbourne Comedy Festival guests like Suraj Kolhatkar and his interaction with working with Melissa McCarthy on the set of her Netflix show. It's super, super juicy. Just search That's Enough Already with Suraj Kolhatkar, wherever you get your podcast. See you next week. Thanks for listening to this episode of That's Enough Already, hosted by me, Ursula Carlson, and produced by Natalie Turner. Supervising producer was Nick McClure, and special thanks to Ella Leaf and Beck Sutherland. Couldn't do it without you, gals. If you like this podcast, remember to subscribe, share it with all of your friends, tell your mum, tell your sister. Don't tell that annoying brother of yours, you know. But definitely share it with a friend.